UN member states are meeting in New York this week to try and hammer out a long-awaited deal to govern the lawless high seas. Two-thirds of the world's oceans are considered international waters, but only about 1% are protected. These are areas of the world's oceans that fall beyond the jurisdiction of any one nation. For the last 10 years, countries have been trying to come up with a global agreement on protecting the high seas, but UN Chief Antonio Guterres has accused governments of deliberately stalling.
We are dealing with the protection of biodiversity in international waters. But some people still think that they are powerful enough to think that international waters should be theirs. I think it's important to make everybody understand that international waters are ours, of all countries and all peoples.
That's UN Chief Antonio Guterres. Jessica Battle is a senior expert global ocean policy at the World Wildlife Fund and is in New York for negotiations on the treaty. Welcome to RM Breakfast, Jessica.
Thank you, Patricia. Very nice to be here.
Why do we need a global treaty to protect the high seas?
Well, as you said in your introduction, the international waters, they are not lawless as such, but they are covered by a very patchwork of different agreements that don't come together to protect the biodiversity, the life in the ocean. And now we have an ocean which is under tremendous pressure, both from climate change impacts, but also from decades of overfishing and potential new threats, such as seabed mining, should that be allowed to go ahead, perhaps in a few years.
This is a part of the world that not many people get to see or experience. What sort of activities take place on the high seas?
Well, probably most of the goods that you have at home or that you eat are traveling by ship to Australia from other places. So shipping is a huge activity on the high seas, of course. Fishing is another big activity. It's done by a few states only on the high seas because it's very expensive to fish on the high seas. But it's high-value fish such as tuna, cod, other high-value species that are then entering, of course, very often international trade, and as such are, you know, commercially important species for some countries. Those are the main activities on the ocean today, but you can add to that a potential new destructive industry, which is mining the deep sea for minerals.
The high seas don't belong to any country, and that's why environmental groups say the seas have been treated recklessly. Explain that to me.
So, yes, under the Law of the Sea Convention, the high seas are everybody's right. So everybody has a right to travel on the high seas, to ship on the high seas, to fish on the high seas. But there's also a responsibility enshrined in this right. So it's not only a right, but this responsibility to protect the marine environment from these activities, from impacts of these activities on biodiversity, have generally gone unnoticed by most actors on the high seas, unfortunately. So this is why we need a global treaty that ensures effective protection and also sustainable use of the high seas. I wouldn't say that the high seas belong to no one. It really belongs to everyone, to you, me, our children, the children in landlocked countries. Mm. Everybody on this planet now and into the future.
You mentioned that it's very expensive to fish, although it's, you know, very high quality. So explain to me, does that mean that if you can make the economics stack up, that you are at the moment, because of a lack of law here, free to, you know, do what you like in that space if you can afford it?
Well, there's two things here. So first of all, the cost of fishing on the high seas, you need big boats. It's high waves. It's not like coastal waters. So there's lots of dangers. You need high level equipment, very big technology equipment. But you also need a lot of fuel. And so these high seas going fishing vessels, they are very often highly subsidized. And so taxpayers' money go towards fishing on the high seas. And then the fish which is bought is usually sold by private companies. There are some rules and regulations around fishing on the high seas, There are agreements in what's called regional fisheries management organizations. The problem is that the governments who are sitting in these organizations and making the decisions often make decisions that are not based on science. So they're making decisions made on short-term profit interests. So there's too much fish being caught and too little attention to bycatch species that are unintentionally caught, such as sharks or turtles, for example.
Australia, New Zealand and many countries within the EU are in favour of this treaty. Which countries oppose it?
Oh, I wouldn't say that any country is openly opposing to the treaty as such, but it's clear that there's various levels of ambition in countries of what they would like to see this treaty do and how many obligations it should put on states, because this is a legally binding treaty. So all states that become parties to this treaty then are legally bound to implement what the treaty is telling them to do. And so that's important. And there's a few countries who are more reluctant than others. And I think it comes to no surprise to Australians, if you ever follow the Southern Ocean treaty implementation, CAMLAR in the Southern Ocean, that Russia and China are often very reluctant to conservation measures in the Southern Ocean. And it's the same thing here. I would say those are the probably the two countries who are the least interested in too strict, stringent obligations under the treaty when it comes to marine protection and restrictions on activities.
Well, it's certainly a very interesting area, and let's see if it can get resolved. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Jessica Battle is a senior expert global ocean policy at the World Wildlife Fund and is in New York for negotiations on that treaty for the high seas.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.